From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
Welcome, everyone, to another session of Lean Local, a program that does what we say. We have interest in everything in the world, but we're going to talk about politics, issues that are facing our community here in Green Bay. And as much as we lean local and try to be, do as much as we can here locally, it's not a silo. I mean, our success is connected with other people, with other industries. And something that we need a good connection with is our congressional representative. And the last 2 weeks, if you've been listening, we've interviewed two of the three candidates who are running for the congressional seat in the 8th District. And today we have another candidate. And this should be fun because I know this guy. Andre Jacques, who is a sitting senator in Madison, ever since he got out of UW-Madison, has had an interest in politics, and I can speak with that firsthand because we sat next to each other in City Hall for a few years. Welcome.
Great to be here, Mr. Mayor.
We're glad you're here. Tell me, Andre, you have a good life. You've got a great family. You are a well-respected senator. You win with pretty good margins, and you're now looking at going to Congress. Why?
I'm very blessed. And honestly, the reason why I'm looking at making the shift from the state to the federal level is, I was drawn out of my seat with the latest round of redistricting. But, I think really I had a lot of people looking to have somebody who's a problem solver, somebody who's a proven conservative running for the seat. And I think I certainly am the candidate that fills that role. And at the federal level, we unfortunately, with the border, with spending and debt and inflation, we have all these issues that we can't really touch at the state level. We can treat the symptoms of them, but ultimately the root cause is in D.C. And you need to have people who are willing to upset the apple cart a little bit, because I think, unfortunately, between the establishment and the special interests, there's a lot behind the status quo. And you have some experience with that as well. I mean, together, we've had to deal with climb back from the debt trap. And, you have any number of past decisions that somebody has to be responsible and find the way forward so that we actually have a future.
So when you get there, there's so much that needs to be done. I don't want to paint that broad of a brush. I want to narrow down on just a couple, three things that you've got passion for a lot of things. I mean, there's transportation, there's immigration. But what does Andre Jacques want to do when you get there? Like, what would be if they say, look, there's the guy that's X?
Well, I think my reputation is I'm the worker. I'm the guy that, I remember when I was in your office and your calendar was just full of all the different community events you were going to. Well, that's what I've been. People know where they can find me. People have trusted me with their stories, whether they're in the district, just outside, wherever they are. But people know that if it's something where government isn't passing the common sense test, I'm willing to be the champion and pick up the torch. And quite frankly, that's, I think, what I would be most proud, not only just to know that I'm being true to my beliefs, but to know that I'm able to make a difference carrying people's stories forward and being that independent voice for the district. Mm-hmm. And, the major issues being the budget and inflation that comes from all the spending and not getting into the line items and the actual, dusting of the cobwebs. And then, of course, like I said, the border, you've got drugs and thugs that are streaming across, operational control handled by the Mexican cartels. And, you know, certainly that's a critical issue. But, you know, I'm somebody that has worked very closely with law enforcement on a large number of issues. And that's, you know, again, one of the things that really sets me apart in this race. You know, not only do I have the majority of Republican sheriffs in the 8th District that have endorsed me, but every single law enforcement group that's endorsed has endorsed me. The Professional Police Association, Milwaukee Police Association, National Association of Police Organizations, the Fraternal Order of Police president has endorsed me. It's just something where that's not just one issue. That's a whole host of things that, you know, go directly to people feeling safe in their communities.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about fentanyl. And I don't think this community, you know, I mean, I was in office for quite a while, and I think people, whether they liked it or not, we talked about everything. We talked about homelessness. And if you don't talk about it, it's, you'll go to another shiny object. Fentanyl kills 200 people a day, Andre. 200. And it's big here in Green Bay, and nobody talks about it, but I mean, I still have my sources, right? I mean, I got people in the FBI, I got people in the police department that I talk to. And what can you do? I mean, I think Green Bay, I think the desire is there to get rid of fentanyl, right? But my thing is that if, again, I've told another one of your opponents one time, if, I mean, 200 people a day, if we had a plane crash and killed 200 people 2 days in a row, we'd shut down the airline industry. It would be, and here we let this go on.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you talk about fentanyl, and it's not just fentanyl, it's whatever's going to come after fentanyl with all the different designer drugs.
Right, yeah, I heard that.
But, I mean, the precursors of fentanyl are coming from China. Obviously, you know, it's not just people from Mexico that come across our southern border as well. But when you talk with law enforcement, they'll say, you know, yeah, they bring it into the U.S. and then they use our postal service to distribute it. And that's one area in which I think that the federal government hasn't really come to the table with state and local government in terms of finding a way to really stop some of the infiltration that we've seen. But I think part of it also is, you know, we have issues with, you know, I've seen this before where, you know, the non-prosecution of any number of serious cases where you have people with a pretty lengthy rap sheet that, you know, it's just the turnstiles. They book them and they let them back out. And
but okay, that happens. And that makes everybody mad.
Yeah.
Except the guy that's going through the turnstile or lady. What can you do, though? I mean, Andre, here's my question. I mean, I've heard you speak many, many times, and like, what can be done? You know what I mean? Like, people say, I'm fentanyl's killing our kids, and it's 200 people a day, 100,000 people a year. But what will you do? That's what I want to hear. I think our listeners want to hear that. What will be done?
Yeah, no, I think we have to get serious about removing people from the country that shouldn't be here because they have repeatedly shown disrespect for our laws because they know they're not being enforced. And, you know, I know that, you know, the city of Green Bay, we kind of looked at, you know, the 501G program and, you know, what are the things that we can do to allow for those conversations to occur between the local and the federal level. The federal level has to be at the table because immigration is a federal issue. I mean, again, it's one of those things where, you know, we can't tackle everything through state and local government. And this is one where we can't continue to have the federal government AWOL in protecting our community. So, I mean, there needs to be more thorough vetting, obviously. I mean, whether it's the Remain in Mexico and making sure that we're not just having people let out of one prison system in another country and coming into ours. But, you know, and, you know, certainly as mayor, you really looked at not just homelessness, but I mean, we looked at co-occurring disorders. We looked at, you know, what are the reasons why we have some of these social issues? And, you know, unfortunately now with the, you know, fentanyl being mixed with whether it's prescription drugs or marijuana, whatever it is, you know, now you're not getting those intervention points. Now a mistake is fatal. And, you know, if you look at the, you know, whether it's, you know, hundreds of thousands at the national level or, you know, whether it's 1,700 in the state of Wisconsin over any given period of time, you know.
All right. I just think, again, you know, I've got this show and, you know, Civic Media, I applaud them for giving me the opportunity. But I've said, I'm going to talk about things that maybe people don't always talk about. I mean, everybody wants to talk about the new building and the new, you know, all this and the NFL draft. And, you know, I think those are all very positive things. But,
yeah.
You know, and I work, as you know, at the new community shelter. And, you know, homelessness is another thing that I think we're doing good, but there's a lot more we could be doing in this community. And I think we're trying, but how about from the federal level? And actually you can comment on the state if you want, but I'm really a little bit more interested in the congressional level. How you think you could affect homelessness in our city, in our community?
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of it has to be knowing what the role is and what the limitations are, because, you know, again, anybody can tell you the things you want to hear at an election time. Anybody can kind of play up what they think they might actually be able to do to be bigger than what it is. You know, in Congress, obviously you're one of, you know, 435. So it is something where, you know, you can try to bring a spotlight to different issues. At a certain point, you need to start holding people accountable, though, to the laws that we already have in this country. I mean, that's one of the big things. I mean, bills are passed by Congress and nobody even knows what's in it at the point that it passes. They're so massive. And I think, you know, what I bring to the table is, you know, I'm a problem solver that does the research, that is willing to do the blocking and tackling to get something done. And I just think that it's going to be that critical that we actually enforce the laws that we have in this country and not look to government to solve problems that we have people at the local level. I mean, you know, there's a reason why, you know, if we're able to block grant funding as opposed to sending it out to the federal level where it can be inefficiently spent, you know, there's all kinds of added layers of bureaucracy that need to go.
I like it coming back to the local level. I mean, you know that. Yeah. I just think that we know what we're doing here. Look, we're here with Andre Jacques, a candidate for the 8th Congressional District. Quick break, Andre. Stick around. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt. We'll be right back. Listening to Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, special guest in-house, Andre Jacques, Senator Andre Jacques, and is a candidate for the 8th Congressional District that's coming up. And in our last section, we're talking about just some of the things that I think are prevalent in the county and how can Andre work on that from D.C. and as a congressperson. But, yeah, we talked about fentanyl, and I want to talk a little bit more about homelessness, but some projects that are not universal, near and dear to our community, the coal piles. Nothing new was talked about when we worked together. It was talked about, oh my God, Romy Dennison, when he was mayor, he worked on that and he was elected the year I was born. So, I mean, it's been an issue in this community and everybody's like, well, why aren't they moved? Well, it's expensive, right? And municipalities have X amount of money. And I think to do something, a big project to do it right, it is really nice when you've got the local, state, and federal government involved. And you know pretty much about the project. I'm wondering if you've given it any thought get in Congress.
You know, you have to build a coalition of the willing. And like you said, at previous points, you didn't necessarily have people who were willing to come to the table to really explore development. I mean, there were studies, you know, more and more studies, but you know, that is one of the things that I've actually been part of moving the coal piles. When I reached out to Weedick when I heard that there was some gap financing needed, something that, I appreciate. I got some credit at the press conference for having made some of those connections, because, a lot of these local development and redevelopment issues, it's about finding that gap financing. I mean, certainly how many different brownfields projects, especially right here on the waterfront here in downtown, how many times do we have to, get people to look beyond what some of the liability concerns would be, work with different levels of government. It does take, an all hands on deck approach. And that's something that, one of the biggest issues for the longest time in my Senate district was the Southern Bridge. When were we going to get the Southern Bridge? I mean, Highway 41 expansion was another big thing. Those were two things that I basically pounded the table in Madison with the budget until we got them in there and they're getting done. And those were things where, I think it's very important to see what those investment opportunities are in infrastructure to really drive area-wide development.
Well, kudos on 41. I love good roads. I mean, I don't just like good roads. I love good roads so much that I would pay more taxes for good roads. And they're safe. You go to other countries, I mean, our exit ramps, I mean, they take up a lot of land, but there's other people that just do this, a hairpin turn and come back. And, that's very dangerous. So we have very safe roads, and I the more roads, the better. But I have to ask, because I know people, ask about high-speed rail. I'm going to ask you, what about high-speed rail?
Yeah, I think there's certainly concerns that exist as far as what is the actual ridership going to be to justify it. I mean, I think, people are rightfully very concerned about subsidies. I'm a big fan of, I used to do grant writing. I've cut through a lot of government tape. And, I think that's always one of the things that you have to look at is making that best case. And, you look at the scoring metrics, how is this going to improve each of these five elements? I haven't heard a whole lot of conversation around high-speed rail in this area.
Okay. But there are people, I just want to say that if you would hold a press conference, a lot of people would show up. And I don't know that it's the most practical thing, but I'm not running for Congress. You are. And I don't want to let you go with, I want to get a better answer than that. So yes, no, you're going to study it. You're willing to look at it. Where do you think about high-speed rail? Because there's some people who, I'm not kidding you, are running on high-speed rail.
Well, I don't doubt that there might be some people that have any number of different pet projects. It's not something that I've, had people meeting with me about. But again, I haven't represented, I represent about half of the congressional district in my Senate district. But, I think there's, again, a whole lot of different components that you need to make anything successful. And I mean, as far as, having that critical mass to be able to receive funding at the federal level, that's a much bigger conversation.
I like what you say about, building a coalition. I don't know if you remember, but when I went to Harvard, you wrote my application. Remember that?
I believe that may have actually been responsible for signing your signature on some documents in an emergency.
Anyway, they always talked about the power wheel and getting, the right players around the table to make something really happen. So yeah, I just wanted to, when you were talking about that, I thought, one of the few things I learned out there. Anyway, hey, how long have you been a senator? I should know this.
Oh, 5.5 years.
Okay. And before that?
I was in the state assembly.
All right. And then before that?
Well, I worked for Mayor Jim Schmidt here in Green Bay.
Tell me, I want to talk about before we got a few minutes here left. That's a long time. I mean, it is, Andre. You're talking, 15, 20 years almost? You got anything that really stands out as this is my favorite, or your successes? And I know there's a lot over 20 years, but just give me a couple before we go to break.
Yeah, no, I've always been kind of a conservative activist and somebody that also is somebody that, I think coming up through the private sector and some of my own consulting before I worked for you, and that really was my first foray into government as far as, I enjoy problem solving. Mm-hmm. And, certainly what we had with the waterfront here was a big example with the City Deck, with the Yonkers building, with a whole lot of the trails and everything else to make people's quality of life better. That's certainly a big thing. Certainly at the state level, I've been Legislator of the Year for VFW, American Legion, a lot of different law enforcement groups, working on everything from internet crimes against children to reckless driving and hit and runs. Ethan's Law is something that's saving lives. Dylan's Law, we know, has saved more than a dozen lives. And those are just things where you're getting government out of the right, out of the way of doing the right thing. But, really one of the landmark things that I accomplished as I was moving from the Assembly to the Senate was eliminating the sue and settle and guidance document abuses of state government, where they essentially were, granting new powers to themselves, keeping things from the people, and it was really being used to grow government and was really terribly, abusive for people's liberties and the growth of the economy and everything else.
All right, we're going to go to a break, but you brought it up. We're going to talk about the growth of government and sure. Turning that back is not going to, well, you know that. I mean,
I've been punished for it by the special interest in the establishment, Jim.
Yeah, I there's some departments I think that you would take a look at in D.C.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I've heard you say that. I want to get back to that when we come back. But again, I want to spend a little bit more time, and I'll try to do that in the next. You're giving up a lot to do this, and I just think it's admirable. All right, we'll get back to that. We're going to be right back. This is Jim Schmidt. You're listening to Lean Local. Right back.
From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to the second half of Lean Local. We're here with our very special guest in studio, Andre Jacques, Senator Andre Jacques, who, before we went to break, was just talking about his career path. And pretty interesting to spend some time in the local, the state, and now hopefully the federal. Different governments, yet all the same, right? In terms of you're working for the people, no matter where you are.
Absolutely. That was really one of the things that in the mayor's office, I was talking to constituents, whether it was out at the mayor's walk and talks or when they call the office after maybe having had two or three prior conversations with other departments that end with curse words or whatever else. And
right.
I'm the problem solver. And I really enjoyed when you talk to people on maybe not one of their best days and were able to get a good outcome. That's something that I've been proud of at every level of government that I've worked at. And, I'm not a big government guy. I'm the anti-establishment guy. This was never something that I even thought that I would do because I was very introverted as a kid. I was, the guy that thought I would write speeches for a guy like you and stay in the sidelines, stay in the shadows.
Well, you did a good job of that. You wrote a lot of my speeches, but
there's a lot of good content to put out there.
But you then stepped out. I want to get to this, and I want to be careful in how I word this. But when you worked for me, you got married, mm-hmm. went to your wedding, you had a couple kids, and I haven't seen you in a while. And now you,
it's a few more than a couple now. Yeah,
so you have seven children.
Yeah,
and Congress is. Just talk me through why now, and from a personal standpoint, why now for the need? I mean, oh my God, we need a new Congress. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody says that. I mean, those guys get some of the lowest ratings nationally, yet people seem to send their same guy back all the time. But,
yeah.
This is it's a big move for you. And I asked one of your opponents the same thing. Family time.
Yeah. No, My wife and kids mean everything to me, and I've still been able to get out to the soccer games and still get out to a lot more other events than my opponents, just because, you know, their whole strategy is dropping bombs from 20,000 feet and fundraising. And yeah, fundraising, I guess, is an important component of any race, but you have to get out there and meet with the people too. And I think people see me as a normal guy. And you know, this was something that, you know, when I talked about it with my wife, she's like, Andre, you need to do this. My kids are really jazzed. They enjoy seeing me out there and joining with me at you know, all the different events along the way. But I mean, I think it really is their future that we're talking about, though. And when we're talking about, you know, whether it's the national debt or just wanting to make sure that there actually is something for them to enjoy, it's pretty critical.
Critical, commendable. Hmm. Yeah, nothing's forever. And I want to talk to you about term limits. You know how I feel about them. It's no secret. Where are you at with that?
So I was actually the first candidate to sign the U.S. term limits pledge. And eventually, after I kept mentioning it, my opponents decided to sign on to it as well. Same thing happened with the ATR pledge against tax increases. So
Tell me about the term. What did you sign?
Oh, so it's basically supporting a constitutional amendment to the U.S. Constitution for congressional term limits, that there would only be three two-year terms for the House of Representatives or two U.S. Senate terms. That would be the limitation. And honestly, we've had that legislation at the state level as well to call for a constitutional amendment. I actually voted for that, and Roger Roth voted against it. So, I think that's been a component of a lot of the different discussions that we've had. Congressional term limits have been talked about many times.
Oh, man.
And, you know, I think if you can actually have a clear set of rules that everybody's going to have to abide by, you might be able to finally chip away at the institutionalization of D.C.
It's on both sides.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
I mean, like I said, there are so few people that actually can break out of the establishment in either party. I think that, again, is what sets me apart, is that, I've lost staff. I've been penalized, legislatively and fundraising. Group spending against me. I mean, I'm not the best funded candidate, obviously. There are, different members of the establishment that are helping and funding each of my opponents' campaigns. And, you know, I'm okay with that, because one thing that I've been able to do in all of my time in office, I haven't been beholden to anybody but the people that I represent. Yeah. And that's the way that's going to continue to be.
Right. Hey, so you got 7 children, and you, I know you well enough to know that you, a high priority of yours is education. Locally, we have some challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Statewide, I think we do too. What we start doing is we can start comparing ourselves to other states or other municipalities. Mm-hmm. Well, in the country, we're losing. I mean, we used to be number one, and now what are we, 16th, 17th when it comes to engineering, math, worldwide, sure. And people are kind of in Congress, and they don't talk about education a lot. Mm-hmm. In Congress. And thoughts?
Well, and I think part of that, Department of Education actually should not exist as a federal entity. I mean, when you look at No Child Left Behind or any of its precursors, our country has not been well served by basically the federal dabbling in education, the strings that are attached, and it really has not driven performance. And I think, at the state level, I've been a big supporter of one of the first bills that I got passed in the assembly was dealing with expanding open enrollment and, letting people, actually look at what was going to best suit their child's educational needs. And, that drove, I think, a lot of innovation. But, when you look at school districts, it's not how much money you spend above a base adequacy level, which we've been well above. It's how you spend it. And you can look at similar demographics in school districts, and one significantly outperforms the other. Some do much better in terms of youth apprenticeship or students being able to get college credit while they're still in high school. And those are all things that I've been, I benefited from that. I graduated Green Bay Southwest with mid-junior standing at UW-Madison. I want every kid to have that, and more, you know, can now. But when you look at youth apprenticeship and the ability for, you know, businesses to test drive students and students to test drive businesses as far as interest and being able to get some of that knowledge and experience, that's, you know, I've actually really helped drive that expansion. And that's, I think there's a lot that we can do on education.
At the state, though, but I just want to circle back. So you don't think the Department of Education at the federal level is a necessity?
No. I think, you know, rather than the federal government taking funds from people, you know, taxes just to, spend them inefficiently and sending them back to the states, I think there's a lot more that could be done for that same amount of money at the local level.
So the department's cabinet in D.C., transportation, right? I mean, tell me where you're at with the whole veterans, because we get a lot of listeners are veterans, and I think Wisconsin as a whole, I don't know, you know more about that than I do, but I think we try hard. Would you agree with that?
You know, Wisconsin does a lot of things well for veterans. We can certainly do more. I don't think you can ever have some complacency that, you know, well, we do enough or we already do so much, because that's how we fall behind. And I think that there are still certainly a lot of ways in which we are failing veterans just nationally, that there's only so much that the state can do as well. I've worked, again, quite a bit with veterans groups and eliminated some of the unfair disparate treatment. I've tried to help our Hmong veterans and whether it's disabled veterans, surviving spouses, some of the workforce issues. Actually, one of the things I got done in the budget, Wisconsin was one of approximately half the states in the union that still taxed active duty military pay and benefits for income, which that was something that obviously, made us non-competitive and caused a lot of people to switch their tax home at the point that they deployed, and we had trouble getting those folks back. But, when you look at the federal level and people sometimes having to send in three applications that they know they'll get denied before they even have an honest look at it. I mean, I can remember doing that, you know, helping veterans that had rare cancers from the burn pits in the Gulf. And, your heart just goes out to them with how broken the process is. And there's a lot of ways in which, from a benefit standpoint, there's only so many things that we can do at the state level. I've worked, you know, certainly with our county veteran service officers to do everything that we can to improve things. And, you know, those are certainly bills that I've been very proud of at the state level, but there's obviously much more room for improvement nationally.
And I want to hear, I just want to touch on a couple things. I mean, I remember going to these mayor's conferences and the federal government would always show up and, you know, our goal is no homeless veterans, you know that. And yet it seems like it's talk. Like what's going to happen if you get there? What is there a program, a policy, or something that will get to the veterans and not go through all this bureaucracy?
I mean, I think there's a lot better ways to be able to reach out to veterans in terms of the benefits that they've already earned by virtue of their service to our country and make sure that doesn't go unspent, as opposed to, you know, it's kind of like the rebates at Menards or wherever else. I mean, there's a certain percentage of people expect that you're just not going to
it's a bigger percent than you think. You
know? Yeah, exactly. And I think when you're looking at purchasing power for housing for veterans, I mean, I know certainly there's I've always seen myself as an advocate for veterans because, you know, my dad's one. A lot of my family are veterans, and I just can't tell you. I mean, you remember everything that we did with the USS Green Bay, everything with the Congressional Medal of Honor Convention. I mean, to me, I can't tell you how proud I was of what we were able to do. And especially, I mean, USS Green Bay, at Marty Middle School, that was my,
that was cool. Very cool. And I think we did a good job. I think what I hear you saying, and we just have to figure out a better way, but I think there are some good programs, but there's an awareness, there's a gap in messaging.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I think there's some things out there that people aren't aware of or aren't taking advantage of. And,
well, I mean, I think in so many ways, I mean, whether you're talking about homelessness or drunk driving or, you know, any number of addictions or mental health, what we're looking for are intervention points. We're looking for how can we make, you know, those connections so that we're not dealing with, you know, a lifetime of greater, you know, greater difficulties. How can we, you know, create a better system as opposed, and that's the problem that government often creates. I mean, it's kind of like when you had the audit of economic development programs at the state level. And you had both Republicans and Democrats saying, yeah, clearly this doesn't work. You've got 50 different programs that are all supposed to do the same thing. None of their staff are talking to each other. And you've got the people that are, you know, raising the hammer to punish businesses housed right next to the, you know, the ones that are supposed to be making the projects happen.
Okay. We got to go to a break. Andre, I got a couple things before we wrap up I got to talk to you about. I wanted to touch on the economy just a little bit more. And the other thing that bugs me about the federal government is the debt. Again, that's a both sides thing too. Everybody points fingers. It's like, that's, and there's not enough pain with the debt. I just think we went from 32 to 42 trillion and people are like, oh, you know, hey, that's the way it is. That's not the way it is. Anyway, we'll come back. We'll talk about that and a couple other things. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt. We'll be right back. Show. Can't keep up with my rhythm, though. They keep trying too quick for the lines they throw. I walk to the sound of my own drum. It goes, they go, we go. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, here we go. Welcome back. You're listening to Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, special in-house guest, Senator Andre Jacques. And Andre is a candidate for the congressional seat here in Northeast Wisconsin, representing 600,000-700,000 people. Right, Andre? About
800,000.
800,000? Yeah, it's a lot of people. And, you know, you go there and there's 434 other people who think, you know, they're the most important person in that room. And we talked about some of the issues that are passionate to you. And I know there's issues in all 435 congressional districts. But something that's universal is the country's debt. Mm-hmm. That is, seems like it just doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, obviously it's a pretty massive deal.
And getting 34 trillion. Yeah. Right. And you see the clock and they send that to you or the whatever, the ticker thing, and it's always going up. And what's the answer to that?
Well, you know, obviously local government has to balance its budget.
Right.
At the state level, we have that requirement. We can't print money like the federal government. We don't have all of those debt instruments where, you know, at the state level, as one of those concerns with the federal money coming down, you don't want to be spending one-time money for new government programs. You want to be able to pay down debt and infrastructure or, you know, things that are going to lead to economic expansion as opposed to just growing government. And, that's certainly one of the frustrations at the federal level. There's tremendous leverage that's been given to Congress with these debt ceiling votes. Unfortunately, what we've seen is the lack of courage in terms of every 3 to 6 months, they just punted down the road. Yeah. And until you actually have somebody who holds people's feet to the fire and say, you know, no, I'm not going to support another omnibus, cromnibus, whatever you want to call it, but continuing resolutions that are going to, not put us on a sustainable path and leave a bigger problem for somebody else to deal with down the road, at a certain point, you know, the pain has to start to come. And I think when you know, again, my opponents are, you know, they're team players, how they term it. And I guess that's great, except, you know, when the team approach is to put your fingers in your ears and pretend that you're not hearing anything as far as the warnings that are right ahead of you. I think it's just critical that you have people who are willing to make those tough decisions. And that's what I've been willing to do.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I mean, I can tell you there are any number of times too at the state level where I've actually proposed spending cuts to my colleagues, and the members of the finance committee say, "Oh, these are great. We can use these. Oh, we'll do a bunch of these." They never end up doing any, because it's who actually, you know, thinks there's any reward in cutting the spending. And that's, you know, extremely frustrating. But
we're gonna pay for that. A couple other things I want to talk to you about. We touched on the economy a little bit, but now I don't know what committees you're gonna be put on or want to be on, but the economy of the country is what, 70% consumer driven. You know, that's what makes it go. Like, what are some things that you've thought about, that you've heard about, that didn't get through, or some of the things that you think we should try to do from a federal level to help our economy? I mean, unemployment's ticking up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think obviously with the inflation, you have people's retirement savings that are getting eaten up pretty fast. You've got, I think, a whole lot of issues just in terms of general affordability, where more people are going to be forced onto the safety net unless we're able to right the ship rather quickly. So, I think, you know, what's able to be accomplished economically, you know, is going to be dependent on what administration do we have, what does congressional control look like, and the negotiations that occur just with different personalities. But, you know, I think that each individual has a seat at the table and some leverage if they choose to use it. And, you know, I've used that in the legislature. I've gotten the scars and welts and bruises and whatever on my back from having done that. But, you know, again, one of those was government contracting reform, was, you know, for the taxpayer, making sure that when we're doing public infrastructure, everybody at the state and the federal level, we're no longer going to be imposing that mandate on local government that you have to operate in a way that is less efficient. And, you know, it's just something that, you know, I have a passion for making things run more effectively. And that's
all right. Yeah. I want to, before we have to wrap up, I want to talk about just this crazy world we're living in of so partisan. And I try to run a nonpartisan show here. I mean, I'm interviewing you and after the primary, both candidates, but just give me, I mean, I'm one of those guys, like, can't we all get along? I mean, it's hard to get along with everybody, but I mean, what I think is always strange is we all want the same thing, right? We want good neighborhoods. We want our kids to be educated. We want, you know, to have good jobs. Mm-hmm. How have you thought about that, just in terms of working together, building consensus? That is not easy. I live that. It's hard. Like,
oh, absolutely. You know, I think that's really one of the things that people have taken notice, you know, just watching my legislative career, because I do have a reputation as somebody who wears his heart on his sleeve as a conservative, and I've gotten those things accomplished, but I'm also a problem solver that's worked across the aisle. And, you know, that's not just on veterans issues and criminal justice and healthcare, environment and everything else, because, you know, people don't know it maybe, but I'm the chair of the Great Lakes Legislative Caucus, you know, 8 states, 2 Canadian provinces that focus on water quality issues. I got more bills signed into law with Tony Evers, a Democratic governor, than anybody else 2 years ago. And I don't think people realize that either, but that takes a lot of blocking and tackling.
Well, that's right. That's what we need. I mean, like, I get the whole, but the game plan's got to be to get it done.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, we've got to, use your football analogy, we got to get over the goal line. I just don't think, I think there's so much petty stuff, and I need to get that fixed. And I think, I hope you're the guy that can do it. You know, I appreciate you coming in, Andre. I know you're busy. You got, what did you say? You got 4 events tonight and you had 5 yesterday, but, we appreciate you coming in. Andre Jacques, candidate for 8th Congressional District here in Northeast Wisconsin. Thanks for coming in, Andre. You've been listening to Lean Local with Jim Schmidt. We will talk next Sunday at 1:00.